Today we're talking with Graham Mitchell. And Graham, what do you do?
Well, I do all sorts of things. I've got my fingers in all sorts of pies. So I've got a long history of working in cooperatives and for cooperatives. So I've got a background. I've worked for Cooperatives UK for 5 or 6 years back in the day. Before that, I set up a worker co-op in Southampton with some friends there, and I was there, did that for about a dozen years, something like that. While I've been up here in the Pennines, I've co-founded a community co-op, sort of a greengrocer business in my local community, sort of taking over a failing business, and that's still running now, nearly 10 years on. And more recently, I sort of put in energy into sort of three areas, really, I guess. One is sort of specifically on a sort of local level. Earlier this year, we set up a thing called the Kirklees Solidarity Economy Network, which is really trying to get some things moving in terms of sort of community wealth building type strategies locally. I mean, the council here, from what I can see, are on board with that sort of broad Preston model stuff. They're working with the Centre for Local Economic Strategies on that. And so as a sort of a citizen-led group, I guess we're trying to act to sort of push them further and faster along that road, I guess, as best we can in terms of trying to sort of influence policy. And also,
can we just explain what the Preston model is? Can we just explain to people what the Preston model is?
Yeah, sure. So Preston model is essentially about relocalization of procurement amongst anchor institutions, big organizations being things like the local government itself, NHS trusts, police, these sorts of organizations that spend a lot of money. They're public sector bodies. They spend a lot of money. So it's about relocalizing that purchasing. And what they've done in Preston, they've managed to bring something like £200 million back into the local economy that was previously being spent elsewhere, which is great. The other sort of flip side of that, I guess, is about identifying opportunities for local business development alongside that relocalization of procurement, and using cooperative models to fill those gaps where that's appropriate. So so that's sort of the flip side of what we're doing in Kirklees as well. So as well as sort of trying to influence policy and shape the agenda there, move things forward, we're also doing practical things on the ground. So two things we're aiming to do. One is that we're sort of fairly well on with now is establishing a social care cooperative. Social care is a major issue. Everyone's worried about it. No one's doing anything about it, or very few people seem to be doing much about it other than scratching their heads and wondering how it's all going to be funded. So what we're trying to do on that is set up a small local social care co-op pilot, with a view to seeing lots of replication of that. So small is key. Small is the answer to that model, we think. And cooperative ownership is critical in there in terms of engaging service users and care workers and replicating that. So small human scale co-ops covering the patch. And then, you know, collaborating with each other on sort of back office functions and sort of regulatory compliance stuff, things like that, which costs more money.
I spoke to Duncan McCann the other day at NEF, and is that social care co-op? Is that the first platform co-op in the UK?
No. There's you're probably confusing us with the Equal Care.
That's it, yeah.
Co-op, which is just up the road in around Halifax, Calderdale.
I knew it was in your neck of the woods, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So we're aiming to work quite closely with them. They're a little bit further advanced than we are, and they're attacking it from a slightly different angle, perhaps. But I think there's lots of scope for cooperation with them as we move forward on that. The other big thing that we're doing on a local level is we're trying to establish some sort of cooperative development support function locally, so that there's a front door locally that people are interested in setting up co-ops. There's some point of contact for them on the ground to access some advice, some early guidance, you know, the basic stuff. Then on the sort of national level, I guess the thing I'm pushing on at the moment is a platform co-op type approach to cooperative development, when we're calling that Platform 6. That's now just started to open itself up to new members. So if you go to that website, platform6.co-op, you can sign up as a member and start making a contribution.
Yeah, I spoke to Mark Simmons the other day as well, and
all right, yeah, yeah. Well, Mark's my sort of main co-conspirator in that.
Yeah.
With the guys at CAN, Cooperative Assistance Network, they're the sort of third founder of that entity. So we're just trying to sort of bootstrap that and co-design what that's going to actually do. But the sort of thinking behind it is about essentially tackling the problem of the lack of, or the dwindling pool of, skilled cooperative development professionals. So there's, you know, all these people talking about, okay, let's double the size of the cooperative economy. There's actually no real infrastructure in place to be able to do that. So Platform 6 is a response to that in a sense, in terms of, okay, what we want to do is bring that expertise into play, mediated through a digital platform, so that we can leverage it much more effectively, and also bring other expertise into play as well. So lots of people who are involved in the cooperative movement who have got great experience and knowledge of cooperatives and what to do and what not to do, but they don't call themselves cooperative development experts. They don't make a living out of providing cooperative development expertise, but they've got a lot to offer. So Mark talks about these people in terms of them being barefoot cooperative development workers or whatever, yeah? So I class myself in that group, and so it's trying to bring those people in and give them opportunities to advise and mentor and support, and also to develop their own skills and expertise over time. So we're trying to build that, and looking at how we might bring resource into that mix. So there's various options that we're looking at the moment about how we could scale that up and resource it, perhaps partly through local authorities that want to get involved in the whole community wealth building thing, recognising, okay, well, we need some cooperative development expertise, how do we do that? Well, platforms could be a way for them to access all of that expertise through that platform.
So I think I need to try and promote Platform 6 a bit more, you know, so if people are interested in getting into, you know, cooperative work, then that might be a place to start.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's early days. There's nothing hugely exciting about it at the moment, because development model for it is very much, you know, if you're interested in this, come along, join. We've got a philosophy of sort of pay to play. So if you want to participate, you need to sign up and make a contribution. It's small, pound a week sort of thing. And then that money that will build into a bit of a resource along the lines of Solid Fund that we can use to fund our own development, but also to fund projects. So, for example, our first commitment is to fund some of a handful of seats at one of the Stir to Action events that's going to be happening. So we've been able to do that as a sort of an initial action to show the sort of thing that we can do. So where Solid Fund is focused on worker cooperatives, we're trying to broaden that out. You know, there are millions of people that are members of cooperatives in the UK. And what we're saying to them is, if you're interested in building the cooperative economy, the best way to do that is for cooperators to contribute to making that happen with their time, with their skills, with their money. Because the existing model, which seems to be about waiting for government to put money into social economy development, isn't working too well, really. I mean, it does work to a degree. Some people are making a living out of it. But we're lacking ambition, I think. You know, there are, how many co-ops get created in the UK each year? It's a few hundred at best. Mm-hmm. You compare that to the number of new companies that are registered each year, which is probably counted in the tens, if not hundreds of thousands.
Is it growing? Is the number of co-ops being produced, being created, growing?
If it is, it's marginal. I mean, that's the problem. You know, let's say 3 years ago there was 100 co-ops created, and now there's 300 co-ops created in the same time period. You could say, wow, that's a fantastic success. Look, we trebled the amount of cooperative startups that we're putting through the system. But it's still
tiny base, yeah.
Small when you compare it to what's the sort of mainstream economy. So how do you reach a point where you're actually making some significant impact?
Yeah. I'm really interested in what you're doing with Kotek as well.
Well, Kotek's an interesting one. I think it's my take on it. I guess you speak to different people in Kotek and you'll get a whole different take on what it is or what it might be or where it might be going, I guess, because it's a very sort of loose network. I think the important thing about Kotek is that it exists. So what Kotek is a network of notionally worker co-ops. So there are some organisations in the network which aren't perhaps technically worker co-ops, but they still meet the broad criteria. And they're involved in technology in some way. So there might be a co-op of developers, or it might be, you know, there are people involved in sort of digital media and quite a wide range of disciplines have covered this. But it's a really interesting group. And when I saw that it was happening, that it was being created, I was really excited by the potential of it. And I remain excited by the potential of it. But as of yet, I think it hasn't realized that potential. And I think that it's still going through a process of trying to understand what its role is, really. I think it's achieved some great things, yeah, in terms of some collaborative work that's happened between various members within that network. I think that's really very positive. There's been some great stuff and outcomes in terms of raising awareness of the cooperative model in the tech sector.
Yeah.
That's been very successful and hopefully will continue to be successful.
So is it a directory for people who are looking for tech services, but they'd prefer to give their money to the cooperative sector? So it's a place to go to look for the kind of services they want, and they can get them from a cooperative.
Yeah, that's certainly one facet of it. Yeah, so if you go to the CoTech website, which is coops.tech, then you'll see who all the members are, and you'll be able to see what sort of services they're providing, what sort of technologies they're involved in, and you can contact them through there and commission them to do things.
We need to get CoTech onto noncorporate.org, because noncorporate.org is a huge platform for people looking to get everything from the cooperative sector, or at least from the non-corporate sector. So I need to get that into the IT section of the non-corporate website. I'll do that later today.
That'd be useful. So CoTech, I think, is a great initiative. And I think, there's a couple of days of activity happening in London next week, I think, end of the month. And it'll be interesting to see what comes out of that discussion.
So a discussion between who and who's invited?
The members of CoTech are invited to that. I'm not able to get along personally, unfortunately, but there will be quite a number of CoTech members will be there, so there'll be discussions there about the way forward, I guess.
What are the other facets of CoTech? Is it sort of mutual support and what else does CoTech do apart from being a directory for the public?
Okay. So there's been some work done on sort of on how to collaborate with each other. Which is always difficult. I think there's been some successes there. So part of it is about how, as a group of cooperatives, these organisations can come together and maybe punch above their weight in the market, and through that maybe secure bigger contracts. So I think there's been some success there. And I think there's also... something there about just about having that sort of broader impact as a group than you can as an individual business, and that could be implemented in a whole number of different ways. So part of it is just about the fact that CoTech exists, that sort of carries some weight in and of itself, in a sense, so that's been quite useful, I think, and will continue to be. I think where there's discussion going on at the moment, I guess, about how we could take collective action on something. I know that some people are talking about, okay, well, we should all be contributing part of our income into a common pool. And then that could be used for some sort of development activity or to fund some work or something like that. So there's discussion around that. I think, for me, that's probably a bit of cart before horse there. I'd probably prefer to see a discussion around what do we want to achieve, and then, how do we collectively fund that activity?
What's your ambition with CoTech? What would you like to see it achieve?
I think there's a massive need in terms of developing the new economy. There's a massive need for a technical resource. And there's quite a lot of work going on, but it feels quite fragmented. There are groups working on a multiplicity of projects, and technology clearly is playing a key role in a lot of these projects. The whole thing about platform cooperativism that ballooned over the last few years, if you want to do business in some way, shape or form, and technology is increasingly playing a more and more important part in that. Building applications or building web platforms, you know, it takes a lot of energy, it takes a lot of resource to do that. And if you can bring the weight of collective skills of a group like Kotek to bear against that problem in some sort of coordinated way, then I think there's huge potential to make some impact.
And I guess there are lots of co-ops all over the country, and they'll be using tech services all the time. And really, they should be steered towards Kotek, shouldn't they? They should be using the services of other cooperatives.
Yeah. And I think that would be great if we can achieve that, because that would bring more money into the cooperative economy.
Yeah.
Or stop the leakage sort of thing, and it would also raise some awareness of some of the issues around technology. You know? So, most people will be quite happy to sit in front of their laptop and use the sort of commercial services of people like Microsoft and Google and these sort of mega tech companies, which are increasingly dominant players in the global economy. And what we're part of what we're trying to do, certain organizations like Web Architects in Sheffield, and I'm a member of that co-op as well, or my organization, my business, my co-op business is a member of Web Architects. So they're all about not using. How do you manage to do your day-to-day technology without being reliant on these mega corporations like Microsoft and Google and Facebook and the others? So using free software avoiding the sort of surveillance capitalism model is.
What do you have tutorials on there, or do you have ways to help people to switch to Linux and open source software?
I think that we're just sort of starting out in turn with Web Architects. I'd say that we're, the guys there have been sort of working away at this for some years, and I'm relatively new in that space, but I'm very keen. I think it's a key part of their DNA really, as an organisation, and I think that increasingly people are becoming aware of the dangers of handing their data over to Facebook or Google or whoever it is, because they're monetizing that data, and they're increasingly controlling what we do through their AI systems and such like. It's becoming more and more difficult to be an independent human being, and be sort of self-reliant. You become increasingly dependent on this sort of matrix of corporate services that is really quite sinister in many ways.
Yeah, and what do Web Architects provide to help people get away from that?
Well, their whole infrastructure. I mean, they provide hosting services. They'll provide, if you want to go to them and say, can you install Linux on my machine? They'll help you with that.
Will they really? Okay, I'm going to link to you from non-corporate then, because I, as a non-technical person, I sat down with somebody who, a Linux specialist, everywhere online, I tried to look for guidance on how to switch to Linux. I got stuck. I got stuck in the quicksand because I got to a point where I didn't understand.
I think there's I mean, it's getting better and better, isn't it, I think? But there's so still a point where you sort of reach the edge of your technical understanding.
Yeah.
And you think, well, I've now got to that point. I don't understand what the next sentence means.
Yes, exactly. So I sat down with a Linux specialist and I went through every single step. And if he said something I didn't understand, I said, right, you've got to say that in a different way. I didn't understand it.
Yeah.
And I went through every single step and I'm now on Linux completely. I haven't touched a Microsoft product for years. So it really, really works. So if you go to non-corporate and you go to the IT section, there is a step-by-step guide for non-technical people.
I'll check that out.
How to disengage from, you know, how to get onto Linux.
Yeah.
But some people still won't want to do it. So, I'll put them onto Web Architects. And so if you can do it for them, that'd be fantastic.
That'd be good. Yeah. I mean, I think there's, increasingly people are getting worried about the dominance of these organizations. And they're seeing that their data isn't secure. I mean, barely a day goes by without a report on the news with the latest data breach where people's details have been stolen by bad actors. You know, so it becomes this whole issue about trust and security online is every day is being raised, and it's not going to get any better.
Awareness is growing, isn't it? Situation
now where people seem, George Orwell would be turning in his grave, probably, wouldn't he? Again, not only are people allowing this surveillance to happen, but they're actually investing in it. They're going out and they're buying these Amazon Alexa devices or Google devices and they're putting them in their homes. And they're essentially, they're surveillance devices, as far as I can see.
I mean, even people who purport to be, anti-corporate, non-corporates, they still do it.
Yeah,
and they get their Ubers and they buy from Amazon, and it's like, wow, what do you have to do to persuade people to look for alternatives?
Yeah.
So
it's insidious, isn't it? This thing, it's like
it's
sort of all pervasive. It's so easy to just sort of roll over and go along with it because it all looks on the surface, it all looks fine and dandy, you know.
Yeah, you can, I mean,
your device and it will play your favorite track. Yeah. Great. Who could argue with that?
Yeah, I think it's down to the innovators to make it just as easy and just as cheap as the corporate alternatives.
Yeah, and that's very difficult. It's very difficult. I mean, if you look at, a few years ago when we did the community buyout of the greengrocer here locally, I got really interested in the whole food industry, and that's a classic case in point. You know, it's like how do you promote local food and all of the sort of community resilience around that when you can go to the supermarket down the road and you can buy fresh fruit and vegetables that have been transported from the other side of the planet at ridiculously low price?
Yeah.
It's high quality goods, and this global supply chain, the food system, has been very carefully honed and designed over years and years and years. To sort of compete against that is actually almost impossible if you're looking at it purely on a quality and price spectrum. Yeah.
I suppose you have to start with the early adopters, don't you? You have to start with the people who really don't want to give their money to the corporate sector. And so...
Yeah,
you start with them, and then you build up, and then you make it easier for the mainstream. You make it easy and relatively cheap for the mainstream, and then they'll start to come in because most people do get it, and most people would like to do the right thing if they can. But then it's just not very, very easy to do, and so we have to make it easier.
Yeah.
So can I just ask you a quick question? It's a rough idea of the cost from Web Architects if somebody wants to switch to Linux?
I wouldn't know. They're just in the process of changing their prices. But I know that if I wanted to install Linux on a laptop or whatever, it's only going to take me maybe an hour tops, I suppose. I guess So that, there's going to be a cost there, but I guess there's also there's loads of people scattered around that will generally help you with that sort of thing if you're strapped for cash, you know.
How do you find them?
Well, I guess hunting around online. I don't know what the current situation is like. I guess I'm not totally clued into that loop, but they used to be. You'd see sort of Linux install parties and things like this, you know. So
Linux install
parties, you know.
Parties.
So you take your laptop along and have a few drinks and enjoy the evening and get it installed on the machine.
A fantastic idea.
Yeah. But I think, you know, you're right. You know, you've got to go with the sort of low hanging fruit, the early adopters, and get those sort of people on board and sort of grow that market, I suppose, slowly but surely.